Welcome to the Royal Caribbean Blog Podcast, your weekly look into the world of Royal Caribbean cruising. I'm your host, Matt Hotchberg, and this is episode number 529. I was on a spring break cruise last week, and I couldn't help but notice a few mistakes that some people were making on board, and a couple of these really repeated themselves, and so I wanted to share some of these mistakes that I personally saw happening, so that way, you're not doing the same. Here we go. I took my family on a 7-night cruise on Royal Caribbean's Wonder of the Seas for spring break. Spring break is one of my favorite times to go on a cruise because we have a built-in time off with the kids. It may not be the cheapest, it may not be the least crowded, but it's an advantageous time to go on a cruise, and as your kids get older, it's harder and harder to find times that really fit into the schedule. Anyway, we talked about that cruise in last week's episode. This week, I wanted to highlight 6 mistakes that I saw people make. Now, there are plenty of cruise mistakes out there that anybody can make, and this is not intended to be a podcast episode in which we talk all about them. I wanted to talk about the ones that I specifically ran into that I couldn't help but notice, and I thought that maybe this would be a good, like, real-world example of some of these mistakes, common pitfalls, that appear. So that way, if you're going on your cruise, whether it's spring break or any time of the year, you can avoid yourself. First of all, and this one was a real head-scratcher, but there are lots of people who had no idea this was a spring break cruise. I laugh at it because it seems silly to me they wouldn't know this, but there are people that get on board and then are genuinely surprised that it's spring break. Maybe it's because where they're from, spring break is a different week of the year, or they simply didn't associate spring break with March, but there were 1,700 children on our spring break cruise. And to be clear, a ship like Wonder of the Seas would have been full whether it was spring break or not. The difference is you have more kids than other weeks, but all cabins have been sold out one way or another, given how popular cruising is, and the economics, of course, of economy of scale, and the fact that basically cruise ships are designed to sail at full capacity all the time. I think part of the issue maybe is that people don't realize that spring break is more than like 1 or 2 weeks of the year. It really encompasses a couple different months. Most people consider spring break season basically begins in mid-February, right around President's Week, and that it basically goes all the way through Easter. This means you'll find spring breakers cruising anytime in late February, the entire month of March, or early April. Depending on when Easter falls on the calendar, the season can be longer or shorter, and you should expect more kids on the ship any of these weeks. Now, when people think of spring break, they often imagine these rowdy people on board who are, like, you know, drinking out of a beer funnel. The good news is that's really not the case, especially on 7-night cruises. I think in general, Royal Caribbean really doesn't have a huge spring break following, although the most common college spring break cruises are definitely the 4-night cruises. Why the 4-night and not the 3-night cruises? Because the 4-night cruises have less demand because they go through Monday through Friday. They're not a 7-night cruise, but they require still like 5 days of vacation time. So they're a little bit cheaper. And as a result, college spring breakers tend to take this particular cruise so that way they can get back and forth between college and being away without incurring any time off. On a 7-night cruise, you're not going to find nearly as many college kids on board, not to mention the fact that Wonder of the Seas, being a newer ship, commands a much higher price. We've talked about this in the past, that new ships always have a higher price tag, and college kids, being notoriously cheap, are not going to splurge for a big new ship. So the combination of 7 nights, new ship, basically means you're not going to find a lot of college kids on there, but you will find plenty of families on board. So if you truly want to avoid a spring break cruise, well, try a cruise in January, early February, or May, to take advantage of this time of the year without the crowds that are on there. For number 2, if I did a podcast episode every time I took a cruise talking about the mistakes I saw, this one would be on the list every single time, and that is people who do not check in online. As I barely stopped my cruise check-in process, I couldn't help but shake my head at the people who had to stop and have the terminal staff enter their paperwork for boarding. Royal Caribbean allows you to start checking in for your cruise up to 45 days before the cruise begins, and you really should do all these steps. Essentially, all you need to do is enter your travel information in the app at home, so that way you'll save time in the terminal. I'm willing to bet you can do it faster to enter your own information into the app than one of the staff members in the terminal who's got to constantly look back and forth between your information and what they're putting in the app to make sure it's all correct. And whether it saves you 5 minutes or an hour, I'd rather have that 5 minutes or an hour on board the ship than standing around in the cruise ship terminal. For number 3, I noticed this one a lot, but it really came to mind as I was sitting at the casino bar on Wonder of the Seas, and I saw somebody order a drink. I don't know what drink it was, but I saw the bartender reach down below and pull out a bottle of nondescript liquor to pour into the drink. So not specifying liquor brand when ordering a drink is a big mistake. Whether you have a drink package or ordering a la carte, it really doesn't matter. The problem is, people go to the bar and they order a pina colada or a Bloody Mary, and they don't specify the exact liquor that's available for them. When you don't specify the liquor and you simply order a pina colada or a strawberry daiquiri, you're almost always going to get the cheapest brand of liquor they have, better known as the well liquor. It won't nearly be as smooth, and usually results in that cringe phase after a few sips. Don't worry, most types of liquors are included with the drink package, so unless you're asking for something like super top shelf like Courvoisier, it won't affect your price. Number 4 on my list isn't really a mistake per se, but something to think about for the next time. When you choose which dining to have for your cruise in the main dining room, you have to pick between traditional or Mai Tai dining. And there are pros and cons to both, but I gotta say, I felt really bad for the people that were in Mai Tai dining. On the first night of the cruise, when I walked past the main dining room on deck 4 at 6:30 p.m., there were two giant lines that went almost back into the casino. I went back a half hour later to check, and the line had subsided, but it hadn't gone away entirely. Now, Mai Tai dining is a really good choice for those that want flexibility and when they eat, but you have to understand there might be a wait for your table. And again, it's not a mistake per se, but when I walked by that line, man, there were some really upset people. And one thing to think about is, and certainly one of the advantages of traditional dining, is if you had traditional, you could simply go into the dining room at your assigned time and not have to wait in any line whatsoever. To me, that is a huge benefit, especially if you're either impatient or you have impatient kids, or both of you are impatient. Either way, something to think about. Number 5 is something I noticed at Perfect Day at Coco Cay, and that is the folks that spent too much fun in the sun. Now, to be fair, experienced cruisers succumb to the sunburn just as easily as somebody who's brand new, but it seems like new cruisers tend to end up with that lobster glow more often. Even though it was only March, the sun was strong enough that sunburn was something that I saw on a lot of people after our first visit to Perfect Day at Coco Cay. So not only should you remember to apply sunscreen before you start your day on shore, but you need to reapply, like, a lot. Every 2 hours or so is a really good idea, and you want to take a break to avoid getting burned. Because once you're burned, it can be really uncomfortable for the next few days. Similarly, it's easy to start having a great time relaxing in the pool or ocean, but be sure to take breaks and remember not to overdo it. And especially if you're going to be in a place like Perfect Day at Coco Cay where your drink package works, you want to make sure you're not overdoing it drinking-wise. Eating before you start your day drinking is always a solid bet, and you want to pace yourself. It's easy to get swept up in the fun and keep those drinks flowing, but you really need to be responsible so you don't end up being that guy later in the day. And the last mistake I saw, and I was really astounded by this, I thought maybe it was just one dude, but this is a lot of people. On the final night of the cruise, everyone puts their luggage out in the hallway, and that's not a mistake, that's a good idea. But the luggage tags that you attach to your bag on embarkation day should not still be there on the final night of the cruise. I walked down the hallway, and there were a lot of bags that had their luggage tags for the getting off the ship, you know, the ones they leave in your cabin, as well as still the original luggage tags that they put on their bags on embarkation day. The problem with that is, and I don't know how often this really happens, but it just increased the risk that maybe your bag gets put on the wrong thing and ends up back on the ship instead of being offloaded on there. I don't know, but I'm just telling you, it's a bad idea in the same way that if you're flying, you want to take off your old tags from your previous flights and not leave them on there as not to confuse anybody. So, again, I noticed a lot of people who had this on there, but remove the embarkation day luggage tags so that the only luggage tags on your bag are the ones for disembarkation. Anyway, those are the mistakes I saw, at least firsthand, on my spring break cruise. No doubt people were making other mistakes that I talk about all the time, but I thought it'd be kind of fun to highlight some of these. Time to answer listener emails. This is the part of the episode where I dive into the email inbox and answer questions you have sent me about Royal Caribbean. You can always send me your emails by sending them to matt@royalcaribbeanblog.com. First email is from Robert. Hi, Matt. Thanks for your podcast. As I age and the memories of cruising 30 years ago come to mind, I'm appreciative of Royal Caribbean's older, smaller ships. I do hope they keep their older, smaller ships. They have a classic look and feel, old school opulence. Does Royal Caribbean have any intentions of building smaller ships in the future, specifically ones that can fit through the ports of Tampa or Baltimore? Thanks from an old guy. Robert, thanks for the email. So the answer is yes, kind of. Royal Caribbean has hinted that they are working on a new class of ships. The name of it is being rumored to be the Discovery class or Project Discovery. It's not quite clear yet what it'll be. Anyway, the point of this is that they are working on it, but it's not official yet, Robert. It has not been approved by the board of directors. It has not had any orders placed. It is simply a idea that's been out there. It's been leaked a couple different times by various people within Royal Caribbean, and the most official confirmation came last year, in which Royal Caribbean International President and CEO Michael Bailey mentioned and acknowledged the fact they are working on something. At least there's a plan in place or something like that. Now, how small is one of the major questions people have, because small can be a relative term, because of course, right now, the biggest in the world is the Icon class. So, you know, as an example, a 5,000 passenger vessel is indeed smaller, but that doesn't mean, you know, it's necessarily as small as you would like it. I really don't know what to expect as it relates to how small it'll be and whether or not they'll be able to fit into places like Tampa or Baltimore. Royal Caribbean, though, did acknowledge that the Vision class and the Radiance class, while still very much useful, are aging, and they have a, like all cruise ships, a limit in terms of how useful they're going to be, and they need to have a plan in place to be able to get past that, move past that, and have essentially a new option out there. I don't know realistically what that'll look like. And be perfectly honest with you guys, even if that project was announced at some point later this year, which is maybe when we're getting an update on it, you know, it takes a while for cruise ships to be built. So we're talking about maybe somewhere around the 2030 mark before this first ship in this class theoretically would be ready. Next email is from Harry. Hi, Matt. My wife and I are booked on a Oasis of the Seas for September Mediterranean sailing out of Barcelona in about 7 months or so. I've got a few promotional sale offers on the adult beverage and dining packages. For beverages, I get buy one, get one 50% off, 30% off, 20% off. My question is, with your experience, what's the best offer that you think will be given, and how close to sale date should I wait? Harry, great question. The answer is ignore the sales, or at least don't pay attention to the like what it actually says. It's completely irrelevant. Royal Caribbean has basically a sale like all the time. You know, back in the day, there would actually be true sales in which there wouldn't be a promotion at all, and then there would be a sale like every couple of weeks, and it would generate something that really, you know, was like, wow, okay, you can see a discount. These days, there is a sale every week. So my advice is this, when it comes to a dining package or a drink package, book it as early as you can, lock in the price. You can always reprice it by simply canceling and rebooking any of these add-on packages through the cruise planner. And the reason why you want to go ahead and book it now and lock in the price is sometimes the price goes up and never comes back down. So book it now, lock in the price, and you can assure yourself of not having to worry about this come the time that your sailing comes around. You're not going to be locked in like, oh, I should have booked it 3 months ago and the price was lower. Book it now and keep monitoring the price periodically. You're going to get an email from Royal Caribbean like every week, if not every day, with different promotions out there. My advice is every, you know, week or so, check back on it, or every month or so. But the bottom line is, the sales that you get in the email, the emails you get that advertise it, are fairly meaningless because they're a lot of just window dressing. And the real question is what actually changes the price. And in my experience, the name of the sale or the sale being advertised does not have any direct correlation with when the price is actually cheaper. There seems to be an underlying algorithm that determines that. And the emails you get advertising the packages and the sales and whatnot are more or less just reminders to book again. Next email is from Kyle Myers. Hi, Matt. I listened to a couple of your podcasts on Mariner, read a number of posts on the blog, and had a few follow-up questions. I haven't cruised in over a decade, never cruised on Royal Caribbean before. My son is turning 10 in April, and has always wanted to go on a cruise, so we're doing a sailing on Mariner of the Seas to Coco Cay and Nassau. Our group includes me, my wife, and a son, my son, a friend of his, and my sister-in-law, three adults, two 10-year-olds. We booked a two-bedroom suite at the aft of the ship, and my sister-in-law got the adjacent balcony room. One, any recommendations for excursions in Nassau with two 10-year-old boys? We're going to do through a water park at Coco Cay the day before we get to Nassau, so not sure another water park is in the cards, but not ruling it out either. In general, Kyle, and I know you just said you don't want to necessarily do another water park, but when it comes to families and what to do in port, especially Nassau, resortforaday.com is where I would go. There's a number of good resort options there. Some have a water park, some more just like chill out pool days or beach days. That's what I would do. Number two, I know recommended gratuities will be billed to the room daily. Any suggestions as to what normal addition tipping looks like for general dining? If it's $20 dinner each night, is that sufficient? Or do you recommend a certain amount per person? Kyle, it's a great question. Unfortunately, there isn't like a steadfast answer because it really does depend. Like, as an example, and this isn't what you should do, Kyle, I don't tip every night at the dining room. I tip at the end of the cruise. But that's also because it's like less awkward and I don't know, just my style. It's always like, I always do that. The automatic gratuities are certainly sufficient. And anything beyond that, number one, depends on, well, what kind of service did you get? Like if someone's really going out of their way to help you out, then you tip them more. As an example, for our recent cruise on Wonder of the Seas, you know, we always tip the stateroom attendant a little bit more than we than the automatic gratuities, because inevitably they're taking care of us and doing a good job. And we have a set amount in our head that we usually use for like a 7-night cruise. And on this cruise, our superintendent was super above and beyond. So I gave him a lot more, but that's because that was in that case, not that's my normal tipping style, if that makes sense. So whatever you're comfortable with, Kyle, there is not a wrong answer. Nobody's gonna look at you poorly by giving them additional tips. So really whatever you're comfortable with. Question number 3, any can't miss things for a 10-year-old on his first cruise, either on the ship, in Kokakee, or Nassau? We're going on Mariner, definitely do the ice skating. That's a huge hit with my kids, whether they've ice skated or not before. It's a lot of fun, definitely something to check out. Of course, the water slides, that's almost certainly gonna be up their alley for certain as well. And then, of course, maybe going to a restaurant that they're going to like a lot, like Playmakers might be really cool because there are video games there. Do cost extra, of course, as well as some, good food that I think a lot of 10-year-old boys enjoy as well. So thank you, Kyle, for the email. Appreciate it. Next question is from Sam. My wife and I are considering a back-to-back this fall. We already booked a room on a ship for one sailing, but the room category is cost prohibitive at this point. So getting the same room for both sailings is likely out. Is there a way to move the luggage from the room on the first sailing to the second sailing without disembarking fully? I understand how the process works for the same room, so I'm not sure if the room changes. Sam, yes, number one, you don't have to disembark fully. Don't worry about that. That'll never happen. Really, the question is, will you have to move everything or will your steering attendant do so? In this scenario, here's what you want to do, Sam. On cruise number one, you want to, I would say, towards the end of sailing number one, not on the last day, but maybe like, if it's a 7-night cruise, maybe on day 5. This is what I would do exactly. I'm not saying this is necessarily going to work for you, but this has always been my approach. I will meet my steering attendant on day 5 somewhere, usually in the evening, right before I'm going out to dinner. I will probably tip the person at that point, because usually I tip at the end of the cruise, but I'll tell them and say, I just got to say thank you so much for everything you've done. This has been fantastic. You have really helped us out. We're actually staying on board for the next sailing, but we're changing rooms. Is there any way you can help us out with that in terms of the luggage? And usually, Sam, something like that works out pretty well in terms of them being able to help you. In my experience, one of two scenarios will happen. They'll either tell you, no problem, leave everything on your bed and we'll move everything for you. Or they'll say, okay, pack everything up, but leave it in your room and we'll move it for you. Either way, they'll let you know. And at that point, you take with whatever they give you in order to get that stuff over there. But you do not need to disembark fully, not to worry at all. Next email is coming to us from Stefano. Love the podcast and always listen to on my way to work. I'm sailing on board Symphony of the Seas in a Sky Class Crown Loft Suite for an 8-night Southern Caribbean cruise. I'll be joined by my wife and 2 kids who are 1 and 4. My wife is terrified of seasickness and have a few questions. Number 1, is being in a Crown Loft Suite on the 17th or 18th deck a bad idea for my wife, or does an Oasis Class ship like Symphony handle rolling waves well? Great question. Here's a couple things, and I know where your wife is coming through on this one. Technically speaking, being on a high deck is bad because being on a high deck, you get more of a sensation of movement than you would on a lower deck. That being said, you're still midships, that's helping you. But most importantly, getting seasick is a very avoidable problem. If I'm your wife and you're really worried about that, here's what you do. Tell your wife before the cruise, go to your local pharmacy and pick up Bonine, ideally the non-drowsy variety. Otherwise, your wife will just take a nap every day, which is not a problem, by the way. But take Bonine every day. Take one a day, start it the day before your cruise, and then every day, take the Bonine again. It lasts about 24 hours. You do that, the odds of your wife getting seasick are pretty low at that point. There are other things. There's a behind-the-ear patch that she can get from her doctor because it requires a prescription. There are homeopathic treatments. Anyway, if I were your wife, I would get the Bonine, take it once a day, start it the regimen before your cruise. I think you'll probably be totally fine. In reality, I don't think it'll be a problem at all. See, motion in the ocean can happen on any ship, and Symphony is not immune to it. So it certainly does handle it well, but it doesn't mean it's immune to it either. Number 2, is the ultimate dining package worth it when you have access to Coastal Kitchen? Is Coastal Kitchen open on embarkation day? So is it worth it if you have access to Coastal Kitchen? It really depends on your style, your budget, etc. You can have a great cruise eating purely at the Coastal Kitchen and not doing an ultimate dining package in the same way that you can have a great cruise eating in the main dining room without a dining package. It's totally up to you in that regard. And yes, Coastal Kitchen is open on embarkation day. It's more your style. Do you like what's served there? There's advantage. And not to mention, you could also go between Coastal Kitchen, go to the main dining room. You could go to the Windjammer. There are alternatives. It's not like you have to eat at just one restaurant the entire cruise or nothing, right? Keep that in mind. Number 3, I know being in Sky Class means you're able to order food in the main dining room to your room. If you have the only dining, can you order from a special restaurant too? And the answer is no. Stefano, thanks for the email. Appreciate you very, very much. Next up is an email from Steve. Hi, Matt. I'm glad to hear that the new destination elevators are working so well on Icon of the Seas. Do you think Royal Caribbean will retrofit older ships with the destination elevators that come in for dry dock? Thanks for all you do. Really enjoy your informative podcasts and videos. Steve, thanks for the email again. I don't think so. I mean, I don't know. Royal Caribbean has not told me definitively one way or another, but I don't think it's quite as simple as it may seem to do so. I would love for them to do that. The destination elevators on Icon, if you haven't heard, essentially, instead of going to an elevator bank and hitting the up or down button and waiting for an elevator, with the destination elevators, you say, I'm going to deck 7. And you indicate you want to go to deck 7. And then it will say, okay, Steve, go to elevator D, as in Delta, and wait for your elevator there. And then you get in the elevator, and that elevator is going to make one or two other stops, and that's it. It's so much more efficient. Works really, really well. So I got to tell you, I love them. That being said, I'm not expecting there to be destination elevators in other ships. I think it's cost prohibitive, but I honestly don't know that. We'll know that probably I highly doubt it for a dry dock. More for like an amplification, and Allure of the Seas has one coming up next year. Maybe, but I mean, I'm not holding my breath on it. I would be pretty surprised, Steve, if they did. I'm not saying it's not going to happen, because again, I don't have a definitive yes or no from Royal Caribbean on that one, but I've just kind of been under the working assumption that it's not really possible, or practical, rather, I should say. Anything's possible with enough money on there, but yeah. Next and last email this week is from William Cardi. Hi, Matt. As always, thanks to all you do for this wonderful community. With the current pricing for all cruises, especially Icon, I thought it would be a few years before I was able to go out on Icon, but my travel agent was offering an incredible deal that was too good to pass up. For our family of four, we were able to book 2 interior rooms next to each other for a total of $4,400. To myself, what would Matt do? So we YOLO booked it. So you may be getting a phone call from my mortgage company looking for a missed payment. Just kidding. We'll be sailing on November 30th, 2024 to St. Kitts, St. Thomas, and Perfect Day. We have 2 boys who will be 3 and 4 at the time. Thinking about doing Megan's Bay in St. Thomas, and I've heard you talk about that quite a bit. Not sure what to do in St. Kitts yet. Have you checked out Adventure Ocean on Icon yet? I know your kids are getting older, so they may not be using it as much, but this will be our first cruise with the kids, so this whole process is foreign to us. Thanks again. Well, William, thanks so much for the email. Appreciate it, and I'm so glad to hear you got an awesome deal on Icon of the Seas. So, how to plan this for St. Kitts, there's a lot of different things you can do. Essentially, it's still like your typical Eastern Caribbean port. There's beach, there's train, there's shopping opportunities. I think in general, the thing that I would probably lean towards, especially with boys being your age, is probably the train tour. Number one, you really can't do trains on other Caribbean islands. Number two, I think boys and boys of that age will find trains pretty darn cool. Number three, in addition to the train ride, you have to get either to the train or back from the train. And in that situation, you're either going to take a bus or a catamaran. So maybe do a catamaran and a bus. That might be an option for you. In terms of Adventure Ocean and Icon, I got to say, while my kids have not been there yet, because they haven't been on Icon yet, I'm impressed by it. Every new Royal Caribbean cruise ship always introduces essentially a newer and more updated Adventure Ocean, which the space is bigger, it's fresher, there's new features on there. It's always really impressive. And more often than not, I'm kind of jealous that I don't have a chance to go in there and check out the experience myself. I kind of wish that something like that existed when I was that age. That being said, something else to think about Adventure Ocean is maybe in St. Kitts, you know, depending on how the cruise goes, maybe your boys stay on the ship in Adventure Ocean and you and your wife get to enjoy a relaxing time or more adult time, whatever the case may be, on shore, because Adventure Ocean is open during while your ship is in port. And there have been many times in which my kids have said, we want to stay on the ship in Adventure Ocean rather than get off the ship, whether they're just feeling lazy or they'd rather play with their friends or they don't want to go out in the sun. There's a variety of things. So something to play by ear, certainly. That might be an option for you. My advice, though, in general, because I know it's a little, you said the whole process is foreign to you, is when you get on board the ship, go on embarkation day to Adventure Ocean for the open house, which begins usually around 1 o'clock p.m. Not only can you register your boys for that, but they can walk through the whole thing, they can see everything, they can meet the counselors. It's really good for both you and the kids to really be able to visualize and understand how it's going to work later on in the sailing. It's very, very helpful, so definitely check that out on embarkation day. And thank you for the email, William. Thank you to everybody for checking out this episode of the Royal Caribbean Blog Podcast. Of course, if you want to send me your emails, you can do so by sending them to Matt, M-A-T-T, at RoyalCaribbeanBlog.com, and we'll answer them on a future episode. Until next time, I'm Matt, and we'll talk again real soon.